here is that we will be finished in here with our business today by 2 o'clock. So as those folks who come up later will understand that the gavel will fall by 2 o'clock. The first item that we have on the agenda today is we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 214, and it will be 214A. That's right. We have an A3 amendment, dash A3 amendment. And do you all have copies of that amendment?
Yes.
Okay. As you'll recall, we had a discussion last time and a request from the Department of Fish and Wildlife to change the reporting from 3 to 6 months. After checking with all of the parties that are involved, there is no serious objection to that recommended amendment. And so I would entertain a motion to move the A3 amendment into House Bill or Senate Bill 214A.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay, it's been moved to move the A3 amendment into House Bill or Senate Bill 214A. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. At this point, we would entertain a motion to move Senate Bill 214A as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
So moved.
It has been moved that we send Senate Bill 214A as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? The clerk will call the roll.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Ward?
Aye.
Senator Snell?
Aye.
Representative
Cruz? Excuse me.
Representative
Tomei? Aye. Representative Leigh? Aye. Senate Bill 214A is amended as moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate Bill 214A be placed on the consent calendar.
It is.
Mm.
You want to carry it?
That was a yes on aggression calendar.
Okay, I thought Representative Tomei was pulling another, throwing us another curveball to get out of here. It has been moved that 214A be placed on the consent calendar. Is there any objection to 214A as amended being placed on the consent calendar?
Not me, Mr. Chair.
Can I get a question in?
Certainly.
Can I vote on the bill as well as the consent calendar?
We are on a motion right now, so we will have to finish that motion, and then we will go back to...
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Seeing no objection to placing this on the consent calendar, so move. Representative King has requested that we suspend the rules and allow Representative King to vote on 214A as amended, and for the record, Mr. Representative King, 214A as amended is a change from 3 to 6 months.
Thank you.
In the reporting period. And how do you vote?
Aye.
Okay. The work session on House or Senate Bill 214A as amended is closed, and at this point we'll open informational hearings. And we'll have the Bonneville Power Administration and Ann Merlo and Martin Shaw are with us to
Bonneville Power, Ann Merlo and Martin Shaw.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Representative Stinson and members of the House Committee on Stream Restoration and Species Recovery. My name is Ann Morrow, and I'm an account constituent with Bonneville Power Administration for the state of Oregon. With me is Mark Shaw. He's manager of Andronymous Resident Fish and Wildlife for Bonneville. And we're here to speak to you about the Bonneville's efforts in fish recovery and project within the sub-basins of the Columbia. Eric Block from the Northwest Power Planning Council spoke with you last week and talked about the council's role in fish and wildlife programs. Bonneville, through the work with the council, mitigates damage to fish and wildlife caused by the federal hydro system. It's among the many agencies that help fish runs damaged by dams, logging, farming, overharvest, and other human activities. Bonneville is committed to working towards regional solutions based on sound biological science. It funds about 250 fish and wildlife projects a year, from riparian zones to stream spawning, studying fish diseases, and controlling predators. As you know from Eric, projects are identified by the council in their fish and wildlife programs. And Mark's here to discuss those projects and give you an overview of EPA's continued efforts in this area, and has brought with him a handout that you should all have copies of.
Go ahead.
No, that's fine. Go ahead. I'll hold questions. Anyone have any questions? Please.
Good afternoon. My name is Mark Shaw with the Bonneville Power Administration. I'm a manager in the Division of Fish and Wildlife in the Andronymous Resident Fish and Wildlife Implementation Branch. If you have the handout, you will see that this is a summary of the last fiscal year's spending on fish habitat projects within Oregon. We focused on this area because this is the area which directing more addresses the Oregon plan. We also, though, within the Division of Fish and Wildlife, also fund production projects for hatcheries and also wildlife mitigation projects. And then we also, although none of these would be in Oregon, we also fund resident fish projects that would be above the Hells Canyon complex in Idaho and above Chief Joe into Washington, Idaho, and Montana. So our area of coverage is the entire Columbia River Basin, of course, within the four states. Plus, we also have a few projects which cross over into Canada. But specifically to address how we work here and how the division kind of works, I'll give you a brief overview. After we receive the recommendations from the council, for the most part, those recommendations as they come over are accepted as they come over. They're because for the most part, there have been negotiations going on before the projects were ever recommended to us. An example of that right now would be that there was a solicitation for what we call the high priority projects. And we're in the last throes of that process of soliciting the projects and then reviewing those projects. And as of today, there are about four different versions of how those projects would be funded. The high priority, and the idea behind the high priority was that someone coined the phrase low-hanging fruit at one time, that there were some projects that just had to be done that could be implemented immediately, and by so doing could have some immediate positive benefits for primarily for anadromous fish. And so we're in the last part of negotiation, and then it's usually during the power planning council that will happen next week, they discuss those and they make recommendations to Bonneville. Once in a while we have a difference of opinion with the power planning council, but that's a very small percentage of the time. After we get those projects recommended to us, then we have a cadre of about 22 project managers. We also use the term contract officers, technical representative. You'll hear the term COTR sometimes. Those are the people who take those projects, work with the project sponsor, and to get them put onto the ground, to develop the scopes of work, to develop the budgets, develop the time frames, work, and especially the part that a lot of people don't realize, every project that comes through Bonneville, because we're federal, they're federal dollars, although self-generated by the power system, they have to go through review of the National Environmental Policy Act. So that a lot of times takes a significant amount of time to put it through NEPA. and also anytime a project affects a listed species under ESA, then we have to do a biological assessment and get a biological opinion from the National Marine Fisheries Service and/or the Fish and Wildlife Service. So there's a lot of different steps that occur after the project reaches Bonneville. And then over time, then project sponsor, it receives the funds and it's implemented. Usually funding is based on a one-year basis right now. We can't obligate funds, just as any federal agency or state agency. Every fiscal year, we obligate those funds on a fiscal year. A contract can last longer than one fiscal year, but normally they're usually based on a 12-month time period. If you look in the Oregon plan, some of the major headings there of a coordination with other agencies, the record of BPA working directly with the Oregon plan is somewhat mixed because we don't have the flexibility of choosing per se our own program. That program is primarily recommended and directed to us by Northwest Power Planning Council. But we do have a pretty good record, I believe, of working with coordinating with several of the organizations which are supported by the Oregon Plan, that be the watershed councils. Some of the major areas we've worked in are the Grand Ronde, the Deschutes, also here in the Mackenzie as an example, to incorporate the essential parts of the Oregon Plan. We have a pretty good record, I think, of working with those programs to work with local governments, with other state and federal agencies, with the tribes, and specifically with the landowners a lot of times through the conservation districts in those watersheds. And especially where we've been able to support directly, we support several of the watershed councils by supporting the usually the coordinator, head of the watershed council, to facilitate the watershed council's working, and also some direct funding goes to conservation districts. We believe that we're trying to work, and especially that now that the Northwest Power Planning Council has developed and is developing new sub-basin plans, and I know that GWEB also has a watershed planning process, and where those processes are compatible, we are using that information flows together. A good example of that would be in the Hood River. They just finished the what they call the Columbia Gorge Province. We've broken the Columbia River Basin into provinces. So within the Columbia River Province, one of the best examples, I think, is that the Hood River had received funding, and some of the funding was also from BPA through the Warm Springs Tribe, that they were able to complete a watershed assessment using the GWEB format. All of that information then was able to go into the process that was just completed in the Columbia Gorge for implementing the watershed plan and implementing the projects now that BPA has received for funding in this fiscal year 2001. So there's where we can, we support. And another example of that would be we've supported, cooperatively funded many of the programs, projects in the Grand Ronde. Karen Leindecker there, I've worked with her and through the process out there where we've cooperatively funded several projects with GWEB funds out there. As I said, we don't have the ability to directly coordinate with the Oregon Plan. It's a quandary that, you know, because we're working on a very large scale and our boundaries overlap between states. So our focus has to be not focused per se on any one state's plans, but it's to the level that we can coordinate with those plans. We endeavor to work with our project sponsors to make sure that they do work with the state agencies. Just another example, over in Washington, they have a new program where there's state funding through that. We're coordinating very closely as we can to cooperatively fund. There has to be a lot of times cost share with the state programs, so we integrate BPA funds as much as we can to make sure, and the people that we are funding for watershed coordination then, and are at the same time working through the state programs. So we try to make sure that, you know, we're not going on two different tracks. As much as we can, we try to coordinate our efforts with the state plans that are available to us. One of the places I think that we can coordinate better with the Oregon Plan is in monitoring and evaluation. I think the Oregon Plan has one of the better, and I know Bruce McIntosh, was hired with the GWEB to head up the monitoring and evaluation part of the plan for Oregon. And I believe that that is one area that could be a much higher level of coordination. On a regional basis, that is one of the priorities for the Power Planning Council and for Bonneville. And for one of the reasons especially is that this is the first year under the biological opinion with the NIMS and the Fish and Wildlife Service for operation of the mainstem hydro system. We have entered into reasonable and prudent actions for offsite mitigation, both hatchery's harvest and habitat work. So this is the first time that that's happened within a biological opinion for the mainstem operation of the hydro system. So in accordance with that, there are going to be checkpoints 3 years, 5 years, and 8 years. And to do that, you're going to have a very good monitoring program and a very good tracking program. And I think through the GWEB program, I think they have some examples. So we're looking very closely at how we can utilize the efforts instead of trying to invent a new wheel that have gone on here in Oregon, because you folks have put a lot of more effort, focused effort, into a monitoring evaluation program and then a reporting program, a consistent way of reporting the results that have taken place from specific actions, check back points. So I think that's one area that we're trying to enhance that into. I could get into some of the figures. You can see from the handout that I gave you, I summarized a few of the figures that from the handout that I gave you there. On the top page, you'll see it's just for fiscal year 2000. Fiscal year 2001, we've just really completed that because the Gorge province had just been completed and there were some new projects there. But between 1980, when we started funding projects in the Fish and Wildlife Program, and up through year 2000, there have been about 585 projects funded for a total of about $88 million. So there's been a substantial expenditure over the past, we're going on 21 years now, within Oregon. In the Grand Ronde, for example, we've funded over 200 projects, somewhere around 221. That changes as every year goes by. And about $17 million there, about 126 projects in the Umatilla, $34 million, 88 projects in the John Day, 81 projects in the Deschutes, about $17 and $11 million respectively. And then some other smaller sub-basins there's some into the Oregon side of the Walla Walla, which we've implemented. There have been some smaller resident fish projects, primarily looking for the extent of bull trout populations that we funded. I don't have the expenditures with me for the wildlife program in Oregon, but it's about $20 million. For wildlife mitigation within Oregon. So just for habitat projects, there have been about, in fiscal year 2000, there were 51 projects for $6.8 million. So a significant amount of funding comes into Oregon through the through BPA funding right now.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, anytime, please.
Yes, thank you. I'm just curious why the Umatilla was funded for $34 million in the Willamette for less than $4 million over these years.
That's a good question.
Probably because Louie helped swing the money.
Our priorities that come to us are set through the Northwest Power Planning Council, and they get their direction from the Columbia Bay, primarily from the Columbia Basin Fish and Wildlife Authority. An acronym you might hear is CUBFWA, C-B-F-W-A. They are represented by the four state fish and wildlife agencies. Also, National Marine Fisheries Service and the Fish and Wildlife Service are represented on that group. And then I believe there are 19 tribes that are represented on that. And these tribes then are from all the different states, and also go into Montana, Idaho, and above the blocked areas into the resident fish areas. The direction comes from them to set that. A lot of these funds that you'll see here in the Umatilla are based upon the large project that was there to reintroduce salmon. So, as I said, the priorities were set, and the states, in coordination, it worked by consensus. And where the opportunities, you know, were first more evident that they wanted to reintroduce the stocks, we're going back into, for the Umatilla program, back into the early 80s. So that program has been ongoing. So it's been an extensive, and there's a lot of maintenance on that program. It's pretty well completed. There's still some projects, some passage and things projects, but the primary construction and whatever over time has been completed for an area like that. So the priority, that group by consensus set a priority that here in Oregon at that particular time, as I said, and then it kept going over time, was the Umatilla, where an example of the Willamette, it didn't have the pressing needs, you might say, that Umatilla had or other areas above the dams. And there was a focus, when you go back and you look at the program, there was really a focus on above Bonneville. Below Bonneville did not really receive focuses within the program until very recently. If you look at the Mackenzie, when that was named, called a focus watershed, we didn't start funding that until, I think it was 1996. Yeah, it was 1996-97 when we started funding that. So it was a gradual progression of moving out and away from the watersheds above Bonneville Dam.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Shaw, in yes. reference to the assessments that are being done by BPA, I think you said it was, or the Northwest Power yes. Planning Council, sub-basin.
Yes, sub-basin assessments.
Versus those that are done by OWEB, are we actually overlapping some of the same
no.
assessment areas, or are they considerably different?
No. The assessment areas will be considered essentially the same because the geographic breakdown of the are on sub-basin areas.
Mm-hmm.
Those sub-basin areas have been defined on a pretty common basis, although there are differences from state to state and systems mm-hmm. to systems. But pretty much there is overlap between the same areas. In other words, the example again going back to the Hood River sub-basin is classified within the council program. Mm-hmm. There will be a sub-basin assessment and a sub-basin plan written under the council's program. What they just recently finished, or in the process of finishing right now, is, as I said, they broke the Columbia River into provinces.
Mm-hmm.
The Gorge province included the Hood, 15 Mile Creek, the Klickitat, Wind River, and White Salmon sub-basins. So it went across the river, circle right in there.
Right.
It's in that province. They did sub-basin summaries based on existing information, existing plans, existing goals and objectives,
mm-hmm.
and then developed. But the next mm-hmm. step is over the next, probably take about 3 years, council program, we're going to move through the entire Columbia River Basin.
Mm-hmm.
Develop new sub-basin plans
right.
using the existing information we just compiled plus new information needed, but it will be overlap. But we'll use example there. We're using that information that was gathered under the GWEB sponsored assessment that was done there. That'll become really a foundation for any new assessment. We'll go back and look and say, what other elements didn't we get? Because there are elements within the GWEB plan, or within the new template for sub-basin assessment that you don't find in the GWEB plan, because it's mm-hmm. it was developed on a regional basis.
I guess my real question is, why do we need to do both?
So that we, as an agency, and the Northwest Power Planning Council, have a common footprint that we can gauge mm-hmm. and look at programs across the entire Columbia River Basin.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll use as much as we can. I mean, we're not going to try to duplicate anything that Oregon has done within the assessments. We'll use everything we can there. But so that we're not, right now we literally are comparing apples, kumquats, pears, bananas, and whatever when we're looking at the programs that come in from these different sub-basins and provinces across the region. And we need a common foundation so that we can assess and set priorities on a regional basis.
Well, I guess what I'm really asking when it gets down to the bottom line is why then would we be doing them separately? Why don't we just have the Power Council do the watershed assessment so that they all do match instead of having them done by various groups at different levels and then trying to make their apples, pears, and bananas all match?
Well, if I were king for a day, I'd try to do that too.
Right.
But we haven't been able to get that level of coordination between the states to say, well, what is there a common standard that we can all agree on? We haven't been able to do that. Oregon has the standard, you have, you know, their standard for doing assessments. Washington now has developed one. In fact, you have competing assessment types in Washington. Idaho has an assessment process. Everybody has their own, and nobody has ever been able to bring together all the different parties and say, okay, what is the commonality here? We've tried to do that through the Power Planning Council, but again, there is duplication in what that takes place. And
I appreciate your answer. It sounds like we could spend the money better.
Yeah, we could at times. Agreed.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Any other questions?
Representative Dean.
I have a few questions. One is that you had said that I believe I heard you say that it's impossible to coordinate with OEB and
not impossible, but well, go ahead. No, I'll be back.
I recognize that there must be some difficulty with that, and I'd sure like to know, you know, more what that is. But I also have to think that if OEB is doing its job, and I think there is a strong process there, and they are trying to be, you know, covering, you know, whole envelope, and they are coordinating, and they're trying to do the right database, that I don't think that OEB is doing something wrong and not having the coordination. I think maybe there's, you know, a lack of, you know, understanding that that's a, you know, that's a needed, you know, place to work with. And I understand that you have to work with, you know, a lot of other governmental entities, not just states, you know, and that you're dealing, you know, internationally, you know, in some places. But it's going to take a lot of convincing, and I would challenge you to prove that.
I don't know. If I said it's impossible, I'll retract that part. It's not within our program directly that we focus in and coordinate exclusively with the Oregon plan. In other words, because it's ODFW, conservation districts, tribes, all those different groups who come from, they may or may not have the same agenda or same priorities as the Oregon plan through GWEB.
It's OEB now.
Or OEB, excuse me, thank you. And so we're able then to coordinate and work on those projects which come through those, and we work with the project sponsors there. So we don't have a direct link from our program back to OEB's program, the Oregon plan. So whenever we make sure, that's one of my things, is there is an opportunity to coordinate with OEB's in the Oregon plan within a watershed where a specific project has come up. That's the first thing we'll ask and look at, is what are you doing as a project sponsor? We know you want to do this project, but have you coordinated? Have you looked at other alternatives? Have you looked at what they're doing for monitoring? Have you looked at their assessments? Have you looked at how they're spending their money? Is there an opportunity to cost share and get, you know, some synergy within these programs? So as to the extent that we can, I make sure that my people, and I did previously, coordinate whatever we can with them. And as I say, I think there are opportunities now as we are being directed more where we have a new onus directly on BPA to meet the obligations under the BIOP for offsite mitigation and to report back. I think there are some real opportunities to look at what OEB has done in their monitoring and reporting program.
Well, I appreciate that comment better, but it still seems like, clearly you need to work with all your constituency, and then there are other, you know, sovereigns and other, you know, independent entities you have to deal with. I would be real interested, not necessarily today, but I see the OLEB directors in the room, that we get some understanding from them in terms of how good the cooperation is or isn't, and what areas it needs to be better. You know, have you, you know, overlooked something? It certainly is a concern that, you know, going back to the, you know, the Willamette at, you know, $3.4 million and, you know, substantially heavier money, you know, elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So we've got, you know, 90% of the money going to, you know, an area that might have, you know, 5 or 10% of the, you know, the, well, no, 5% of the money going to maybe 90% of where the fish are.
Mm-hmm.
And you've said, you know, why that is the case. And I also have a concern that a couple of years ago, it looks like Bonneville was getting out of the financial hole and, you know, in good order. And now with today's power rates, you don't have maybe some financial flexibility that you have, but you know, somehow, you know, the other side of the hill has to, you know, come into the picture, and, you know, certainly the needs are very substantial and different there.
Yes, I agree.
Another comment to follow, but I think you want in there.
So. Representative King, I think that you're correct that there are areas that, you know, that would be a good question. We've I know we had some contact with Ken Beerley, and we were talking about, you know, how could we better coordinate the sub-basin assessment process so that we didn't, as you indicated, we didn't have the overlap, that we were creating a way that we were utilizing funds in a better manner. And I wish I had more flexibility than I do at different times. But receiving direction as we do, it's a challenge to then try to meet, you know, and Ken has some good ideas about how we could better cooperate on funding and utilize our funds better, I think, and combine them. But I haven't been able to meet his desires at this time.
Well, and you've opened up an area.
Did you have another question?
I do. I think you've opened up an area that I need to get some more product knowledge on, so I can learn about what to advocate, you know, for, and I'll make an effort to do that with,
right,
with the appropriate policy people. That you know, when we go back to the 70s and into the 80s and earlier, Bonneville was, you know, very, very clearly, you know, in all the press, saying our job is power, you know, and in a sense, you know, the hell with salmon.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and so now we see that there's, you know, a built-up loss there. And certainly there's a lot of problems, but Bonneville, you know, did generate a lot of that. And, you know, so, you know, I think that, you know, we want to make sure that there is, you know, more contribution to the process. But also, I think it's important for us as policy people to be looking ahead that, you know, certainly the power crisis we've got today, that if Bonneville ever, you know, is looking at being privatized or sold, et cetera, that there's a heritage loss there that Bonneville is, I think, responsible for, that now the rest of the, you know, the Northwest is having to pay in terms of salmon costs because we did let the, you know, the runs get so low, and that.
Excuse me. That sounds like an editorializing rather than.
Almost. I was about 4 seconds from completing. But I did want to say that if that ever does happen, that I think that does need to be built into whatever price is there, because, you know, that, you know, it's not fair to have the damage, sell, and then leave the state with, you know, enduring the cost of that without that being part of it.
Thank you. And we have a question for Representative Lee and colleagues. We do need to move along.
Right. I somewhat disagree with the premise that it's a lack of coordination. I think it's a lack of this agency, both state and regionally, using the same protocols which they should be using. And I would really like to see EPA's process in the Northwest Power Planning Council sub-basin work and OEB have the same protocol so that we could spend the money once instead of twice. In House Bill 3225 last session, we were requiring protocols be standard across the region, and that bill didn't go forward without provision, but that's something I'd really like to look at as we continue to pursue the Oregon plan, that we get to where we do have standard protocols. I know even soil and water districts and watershed councils aren't using the same ones, and so the work doesn't fit together the way that it should always, and we should really push to do that. And any cooperation we got from Bonneville would be especially helpful in bringing that together.
Representative Lee, I agree with you on that. And actually, we were in the staff meeting yesterday, and we were talking about overall about data standards. And we were, you know, there is, in fact, there is an initiative from the council, and we're about to fund a new project which looks at data needs. A company which had worked in the Chesapeake Bay area and had that over time. It took them, I think, 5 or 6 years, but that was their goal, and they eventually reached it between, what do we have, about four or five different states there and many different agencies. And so that is one of the goals that we have for reaching some types of common standards at the federal level.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you,
Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, I appreciate our time being here today.
Appreciate your coming down and the opportunity to have you here, the information you've given us, and I'm sure you'll be hearing from some of us for some follow-up on some of the
questions. Fine, I'd be glad to talk with any of you anytime.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Colleagues, Representative Cruz and Representative Leonard would like to have the rules suspended so that they might be allowed to vote on Senate Bill 214A as amended.
How are they going to vote?
Yeah, we don't know how they're going to vote.
We don't get that privilege. Is there any objection?
Yes.
Chair knows.
Hearing none. Representative Leonard, how do you vote? Representative Leonard votes aye. Representative Cruz?
I think I'll vote aye.
Okay. Representative Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Otherwise, the consent goes, right?
I'm about abstaining, but.
Okay. We'll move on and have an informational with the Watershed Council panel. Wendy Kroger and Wayne King.
No, Mary.
Mary King, excuse me.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
May I please announce that Mary King is the president of the Milwaukee City Council and is acting as mayor since my resignation.
Oh. Well.
Wow.
Well, welcome.
Why do you get
Wendy's going to start, but I just want to say this is a synopsis of some things that have come out of the John Cooper Watershed Council and then also the general overview of how watershed in general needs the Oregon plan.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Jensen and members of the commission. My name is Wendy Kroger, and I live in Salem, and I was here yesterday, and I would think it would get easier. It doesn't. This is still hard. I'd rather be planting Gevel's clubs. The purpose...
It's pretty easy. I mean...
I know, but it's
still hard.
You've
got a good
hard.
Story, don't you?
Okay. The purpose of our presentation today is to reiterate the importance of watershed councils in terms of the Oregon plan for salmon and watersheds. And the mission statement of the plan is restoring and protecting Oregon's watersheds through locally driven, voluntary cooperative efforts. Today, I represent Salem's urban area watershed councils. We have three, Claggett Creek, Glenn and Gibson Creeks, Pringle Creek, and we're forming a fourth with Mill Creek. I am currently the president of the Pringle Creek Watershed Council. Espousing the value that there should be no turf in our streams, we have joined together in an urban framework where we represent each of our watershed councils, but we also recognize that we're tributaries of the Willamette and Columbia Rivers. In microcosm, we may be representative statewide of the challenges and the hope for restoring and protecting Oregon's watersheds. What I would like to do is address 3 points, if I may, and use my information from Salem Area Watershed Councils to demonstrate points. The first of the three is watershed councils are vital to the Oregon Plan. Second is that watershed councils are locally driven cooperative efforts. And third, that watershed councils are getting things done. First, watershed councils are vital to the Oregon Plan because they are the only group that's specifically formed or organized around ecological, hydrological, and geomorphic unit of the watershed. Thank you. The dirt part of the watershed. City, county, and state and other agencies have organizations that are interested in parts of the watershed, but not specifically the topographical or geographic focus of the watershed. And as such, we believe that watershed councils are unique in their ability to grapple with problems and solutions on a watershed level. Watershed councils offer a more focused approach in the larger jurisdictions and a broader one in the smaller jurisdictions. We are each unique parts of a puzzle. For example, Claggett Creek is about 20 square miles in northeast Salem, mostly flat, open system, and one of their biggest claims to fame last year was that we collected 16,000 pounds of trash out of Claggett Creek. Darren, real proud of that. We'd like to correct that. It also has common area-wide problems with what we call duck dog and cow E. coli. There is a way to tell between the difference between people and animal E. coli, and we all suffer from E. coli and problems in Salem in our streams, but ours is primarily duck and dog. They also have low dissolved oxygen and high water temperatures, especially in the summer. Their water quality is abysmal. It drains Lancaster Drive, so what do we think it's got on it? But the creek itself is one of the few remaining areas in Salem where we have contiguous wetlands, and so it has habitat and wetlands very worth saving. Glenn and Gibson Creeks drain the hills of West Salem. They are still clean streams, but there's very fast urban growth happening in that area, and so therefore the streams are degrading and water quality is decreasing. Pringle Creek drains 13 square miles, and it's fully an urban and suburban watershed. It's almost all within the Salem city limits. It flows. It has the distinction, actually, of being on DEQ's 303D Water Quality Limited list and has been for several years. It's exceeding standards for bacteria, again, the E. coli, high water temperatures, and toxics. As an aside, one of the toxics they found in Pringle Creek was last used legally in 1975, and it's taken this long to find its way into our watershed and into our stream. So these things move slowly, but they are inexorable. Monitoring in Pringle Creek also shows low pH and dissolved oxygen. We've had major industrial spills over the last few years, and they've wreaked havoc on the small remaining populations of fish that we do have. Even so, we managed to retain a diverse and healthy small pieces of habitat, and there are areas where the water runs cold and clear. Mill Creek drains 110 square miles, and it's the area that we're working with forming a watershed council. It starts at the base of the Cascades, and it runs through several small communities, Omsville, Sublimity, Turner, Dayton, and although primarily agricultural, there's also an awful lot of industrial and heavy urbanization use there as well. The EQ has listed Mill Creek for bacteria, but it also is home to Chinook, Steelhead, and Cutthroat. We who live and work in Salem recognize our current limitations to the mosaic of restoring and protecting Oregon's watershed. Mm-hmm. But Salem streams used to offer full service to fish. Now we mostly host rearing fish and a few cutthroat year-round. We don't do a lot of spawning anymore. Our goal today is to put the cleanest water we can into the Willamette River. Our job is to figure out the best way to do that. And focusing on water quality is a start for us. The second point that I wanted to address is that watershed councils are primarily locally driven cooperative efforts, and I wanted to give you an example of the really diverse array of partners that come together in a local watershed council. The Pringle Creek Board of Directors, for example, we have representatives from 8 different constituencies. For example, in education, we have an award-winning chemistry high school teacher. We also have the director of public facilities for the school district representing the educational piece. In business, we have 2 of the largest private employers in Salem, Mitsubishi and Boise Cascade. In terms of environmental, we have an architect who represents Friends of Marion County, but we also have a fish biologist who represents native plants. We have residents, we have local businesses along the stream who are also part of our Watershed Council, we have local government, we have two technical scientific advisors who live in our watershed. One is a water rights attorney who's a hydrologist, and another is the head of the Department of Biology at Willamette University, and she's internationally acclaimed as a native plant biologist. We also have 7 neighborhood associations, and one of our other people on the board is a full member of the board, and she's a high school student representing high school students in our neighborhood. So I wanted to share with you the variety and the depth of the kinds of people who are serving on our local watershed councils and the knowledge that they bring, as well as the commitment. Species recovery and stream restoration both depend on a combination of individual behavioral changes and community commitment to projects and activities, and watershed councils are formed to bring those together. I think by building the consensus from diverse stakeholders like this, you get a stronger emphasis on getting done at the local level and a commitment to get done at the local level than you will have from bringing it from the top down. Third, watershed councils are getting things done. From fish passages to riparian restorations and from education to volunteerism, watershed councils are a powerful way for people to get involved and to witness the impact a community can have on a water body. Education and restoration projects epitomize the benefit of watershed councils to bringing together dozens of partners from throughout the watershed and voluntary efforts which make a significant impact on the water quality, fish, and habitat. These efforts are not only tangible, they also inspire the people in the communities to do something with their watersheds, to come to love them and to take care of them. Salem has the opportunity now to participate in something we're calling Salem Futures, and we're planning 50 years out. Watershed councils are represented on that effort. Salem Watershed Councils actively participate in the life of the community, from reviewing and providing recommendations on such local activities as our new erosion prevention and sediment control ordinance, a proposed new sidewalks program, the Stormwater Master Plan for Salem. We also host citywide educational forums and coordinate streamside planting projects. We serve on neighborhood association boards. We assist teachers in school projects. Several of our parks now look different because of us. Many of our parking lots will include water quality treatment facilities because of us. I would like to just make an additional comment in terms of the testimony that went before us in terms of watershed assessments. We are in the process of doing a watershed assessment for Salem at this point. We have, among other groups, working with us a technical advisory group, and on that we have representatives of Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, as well as federal ODF&W. I haven't got that right. Fish and Wildlife Service, sorry. The acronyms get me. We have federal, state, and other local jurisdictions so that when they have particular needs and they have particular protocols, we try to incorporate them. We try to begin to realize what their needs are so that when we build a plan from this assessment that we will have done late this year, we will be able to meet the needs that they need also, and we're going to be dovetailing with them in terms of the plan. I think it's important to know that one of the reasons for doing an assessment at the local level is to include people who live there and who work there. We buy in if we see what we're doing and if we get to help with that, and it makes much more sense for us to have a stake in what we're doing in our watersheds than to wait for somebody from BPA who, frankly, were the ones having to build the fish ladders, not OWEB. So I guess I'd like to say that we'd love their help and we'd love their input and we love the fact that they want to be involved with us. But we live here and we'll be here after they are. So thank you very much. The only other thing I want to tell you is that I wish I could give you 25 copies of my testimony. And in my only comment addressing budget, I will tell you that I could not afford to do so because Xeroxing comes out of my pocket. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have 4 minutes, right?
you have what you use.
I'm not going to repeat anything she said, but if you could just imagine that throughout the state, this is going on in all the watersheds. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit about what's happened in the Portland area. I'm here representing the Johnson Creek Watershed Council. And I want to talk to you about what's been happening about getting together and combining and sharing with each other. Because about 3 years ago, Earl Blumenauer helped us spearhead a Johnson Creek Watershed Summit. We have had them now for 3 years. And every year, a minimum of 200 people come. Out of the first Johnson Creek Watershed Summit came a promise from the policymakers that attended. We had a policymaker from each of the jurisdictions. Johnson Creek Watershed has five or six different jurisdictions that it flows through, that we would meet quarterly and talk with each other and help to set policies that would be healthy, that would transcend the political boundaries so that we could get into the environmental boundaries and things that are really going to be important 150 million years down the road when we are not there anymore. We have been meeting now for 3 years. There have been changes in elected officials, and still they're coming from their cities and their counties. We have Multnomah County, Clackamas County, Milwaukee, Happy Valley, and Gresham represented on the council. In addition, there is an interjurisdictional committee of people that meets on a very regular basis out of our public works departments, and they talk about what they can do so that our codes all match, so that what's happening upstream is not affecting downstream. With the restoration plan that came from City of Portland paid for this, but we're all very delighted to have it. It's a plan, a long-term plan to restore Johnson Creek to what we all know it's not, it will never go back to what it was, but as close as we can. And it's voluntary. The reason it's so expensive is because any kind of property management we're going to be doing through the Willing Seller Program. And, of course, we're willing buyers as long as we have the money. Let's see. We do, of course, there's the everyday going out and restoring hands-on kinds of things. There's education that goes on. Our groups itself are becoming larger and more vocal. And as far as I'm concerned, it's a fabulous bang for the buck. One thing that we've done is agreed as policymakers that if, say, Happy Valley has the opportunity to have a grant, and it might be that the city of Milwaukee would not get the grant right now, we'll still sign on to that grant, because we all know that the more jurisdictions you have signing on, the more powerful that is. We'll say it's a federal level grant. We have a lot of backing from Earl Blumenauer, and this would not have come about unless we had the watershed council. And I'm just thrilled to see how ours is growing, because, you know, this is something we can do with education. We can help this whole Endangered Species Act and all of the things that are coming down. The regulations will be easier, I think, to handle if they come from a local group of people rather than top down. So I urge you to always remember how important these are. It's a great bang for your buck. Thank you.
Yep.
Any questions?
Thank you for your testimony. I'm one of those jurisdictions, at least the folks I represent, that the Johnson Creek watershed flows through.
Oh.
East Portland up to the Clackamas line. How important is the council coordinator to the Johnson Creek Watershed Council?
Very important.
Can you give me your opinion as to the proposal to cut in half the funding for the Johnson Creek Council coordinator?
Well, I think it's criminal. We could not. Well, it's not criminal. I mean, we're working on it. We couldn't believe that it happened, because we have, in the last 3 years, we have come so far, and our coordinator is so good. And of course, they get paid hardly anything anyhow for the job that they do. And I think things are happening now that perhaps there'll be a different solution to the problem.
And if I could ask another question, Mr. Clark. And you are familiar that of the 95 watershed councils, only two coordinator positions are being proposed to be cut in half, and that's yours and the Columbia SLU Watershed Council.
Yeah. And we have met about this. I'm going to withhold judgment until after I see. I think there's a meeting coming up in a couple of weeks. And after that, I'll feel more free to be speaking. I can't justify it, but and I guess the reasoning was because we're in the Portland area and we can get more money from areas up there. Well, I know, as being a city councilor in Milwaukee, I think we're looking at a $200,000. Deficit in our budget. If I can just keep our funding for the Watershed Council, keep it as it was last year, I'll be lucky, and there certainly isn't going to be any increase. So I think perhaps that is being re-looked at.
Okay, that's good. And, Mr. Chair, just one final thing. I share your reaction and want you to know that from my end, I'm working on that very hard, too.
Thank you very much.
There's a number of us that are concerned.
Because, as I said, you get so much for this money. It's not a lot of money. And the people that I know that work there, I mean, there's so many volunteers,
mm-hmm.
and I mean, like, this is my council assignment, but I would do it anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
And the hours that go into making a council go are just indescribable.
Mm-hmm. I'm very familiar with your work.
Good return.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Please, Representative Domi.
Mary, can you give us an idea on how many hours we might spend a month just on the watershed?
On the watershed council? Well, I can't go to the meetings because I have city council that night. But we have executive meetings, XCOM meetings once a month, and they're about 3 hours long. And then, coming down here to testify, going to meetings down at Metro that, you know, would represent the watershed interests.
Thank you.
At least.
Could I
get confused between that and council.
I'm a volunteer, and I probably put in 80 hours a month.
80 hours?
80.
Is that unusual, do you think?
Probably. But probably not. I do put in more than most others because I don't have a day job. But because everybody else on our watershed council is working full-time, there are very great limitations to the time and energy they can give.
Right.
And I figure I'm sort of the grandma holding it together until other folks can come along. But it does take that. And in terms of the watershed coordinator, the council coordinators, they're absolutely critical. We share one. All four of our watershed councils share one. It works very well. She's great. And we will not move forward without keeping her and getting adequate support for her.
Right. We've heard that from other water companies.
I'm not sure, though, that sharing a coordinator in all areas would work.
Right.
Because, you know, the Portland area, so there's Columbia Flu Watershed Council, which is a, you know, vast, huge area, and then there's ours. And as I say, there's so much to the personal part of it, knowing that watershed council with the watershed by the back of your hand.
Yeah.
I would point out the other side of that, that Douglas County is bigger than Portland, and we have one watershed coordinator for the entire county.
Mm-hmm. So. I understand that.
Another question?
Yeah, we're cleaned on that. We don't move, so. Our cows are cleaned.
One more thing, and I know you people are escaping to places.
You're fine. Don't worry.
I'll never say where you're going. But the watershed councils are turning out to be a lot more important than just fish. And I don't mean just fish in a negative way for the fish. But there's so much more grassroots that goes along with a watershed council and so much more education that just happens, as I said, when you're on that local level.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
This time, Al White, who is a private citizen, has come to share some testimony with us. Lady there will.
My name is Al White. I'm with a non-profit private environmental group. We do water quality enhancement restorations throughout this area. We are spending probably, it's over $200,000 in watershed enhancement here in the city of Salem and Kaiser at this time, and we work all the way out to Sheridan up through. But also as a part of my participation in that group, I have been involved with watershed councils, founding watershed councils. Wendy spoke of the watershed coordinator they have here with inputs from the various watershed councils. I actually wrote the grant for OWEB to get that coordinator for the four watershed councils here in Salem. So I'm very involved with them. I'm in the steering committee of a watershed council, and I'm a project manager for a for that particular watershed council also. So I come here to speak to you as a private citizen, but in support of watershed councils, even though I work with a nonprofit environmental group. At first glance, people don't understand the funding for administration for watershed councils. They would rather see all the money go to the fish Unfortunately, this is not the case. Some watershed councils are handling 5-6 major projects involving hundreds of thousands of dollars. That requires constant coordination. The majority of the watershed council members are all volunteers. These people all have day jobs and night jobs sometimes. They don't have the inclination in some cases because they're devoted towards particular projects. They don't have the wherewithal to be administrators. All effective organizations have some type of staff, including this one here. You could sit here and think yourselves of who's going to take that, which one of you is going to take that position, and which one of you is going to be back there running, just here in this office, in this room at this time. You are much like watershed councils in that I doubt seriously that you receive enough monetary remuneration to pay for the hours that you put in as representatives for us. You depend on staff. They carry your water for you. They make it easy for you to then be the representatives to for us. Watershed councils are much the same way. They have a lot of volunteers who do a lot of time, but they need this staffing. And that's basically why I'm here. And the other thing is that watershed councils, they are the of the people by the people. They're the lowest level, and therefore they get things done the cheapest. And I will tell you this is a fact, having worked with bureaucracies involved with doing restoration and enhancement. One case is there's a bureaucracy here that was funded more than adequate to do the job. I don't know where the money went. That was 3 years ago. The project has never been completed, and my understanding is that most of the money has went to doing engineering studies, and now if they can't get volunteers, the Army National Guard, the job's not going to get done. Wallace Watershed Council that I'm working with, we took on a job that could not be accomplished because of political reasons, basically over who owned the road, pulling out some culverts and putting in a bridge. We've now been fully funded. We managed to overcome this because we were a watershed council. We could work with the county and the landowners. We have been funded to do the bridge. It was expected by the county that it would cost approximately $160,000 to put in this 50-foot concrete bridge, besides pulling out the culverts and putting in the temporary bridge. Excuse me. We're getting $100,000 from OWEB. The other $60,000 or so is volunteers doing things. The landowners are giving up the property the bridge is going to sit on. The county is not having to buy that right away. That $60,000 is a savings to the state in ditch enhancement. That's what I'm speaking of when I say that doing these at the lowest level, having watershed councils, having volunteers, having people from that area working in the project, actually makes every dollar spent go a lot further. Another project that I worked on, this was as a private organization, we were doing some street and side restoration with a farmer up in the North Santiam. We involved the watershed council with us. We were told by ODFW, did you ever look and see the bridge that the owner had put in? When they had put the bridge in, they had drove the approaches across half of the floodplain, thus depriving the water. When it got to high water, it couldn't get over into the second channel, which the small fish need for rearing and what have you. We went to the landowner because we were funding the other bridge project. We couldn't get funding for this particular project. We discussed it with the landowner. He put $70,000 in. We replaced that bridge with a 90-foot bridge, which spanned the entire the width of the floodplain. We now have a secondary channel. The cost for 2 years for our watershed coordinator, $70,000. So we have more than paid for, as far as enhancement goes, by these projects. And that's why I would ask you as a committee to keep this in mind, that there's another facet. You're getting a lot more money out of it, getting a lot more done. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. White. We appreciate your testimony. Are there questions for Mr. White? Thank you very much for sharing your testimony with us. We did pretty good. It's only 2:15. We are adjourned.
Thank you.